You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, welcome in, Hornets fans, to another BuzzBeat podcast. Don't forget, we are a proud member of the Blue Wire Network, and be sure to check out the website, bluewirepods.com, for more content. This is Spencer, and I will be joined, as always, by Richie and Brian. Follow us on Twitter, at QCH Spencer. That's me on Twitter. You can follow Richie, at Richie Randall, and you can follow Brian, at BGeist underscore Bird. And also be sure that you're following the podcast. It's at BuzzBeat Pod. All right, look, today I'm pretty psyched about this episode. We have a very special guest. As the Hornets celebrate their 30th anniversary, wanted to dedicate this show to kind of paralleling that. We haven't really done much of that. Of course, we're not affiliated with the Hornets, so we don't have to, but we have a special guest that's really going to help us do that on this show. I will introduce that guest very shortly, but quickly, let's check in on the crew. Richie, what's happening?
Man, not a whole lot. I've been busy lately. I was actually in a wedding this past weekend, so my Friday was shot, my Saturday was shot, and then Sunday was just the time to kind of catch up on sleep, and I never got an opportunity to watch that Hornets game from Friday, but I did get an opportunity to watch the Hornets game against the Knicks last night, but it's a very busy time for me. What about you, Spencer?
Yeah, I think I told you when we first jumped off here on Skype, nothing much is happening, but everything's happening at the same time. So I'll just kind of leave it at that. BG, so since the last time I talked to you, how much has your Zion Williamson crush grown?
More and more. I don't know if you guys watched the game Monday against Notre Dame, but you could make a case that was the best game he's played since he got to Duke. It was certainly up there with the Kentucky performance and a few others. So busy with college hoops. I'm going to watch the State-Virginia game once we're done with this tonight. And I'll be in Durham covering the game on Saturday with to get to see Shamori Ponds against Trey Jones and Zion. So that should be a lot of fun.
Good stuff. Good stuff, man. All right. Well, look, it's my honor to introduce our guest for today's episode, Hornets legend Kenny Gattison. Kenny was drafted by the Phoenix Suns in 1986, and he also spent a year playing in Vancouver after his days in Charlotte. But Kenny spent, obviously, the majority of his NBA career with the Charlotte Hornets from 1989 to 1995, six seasons in total. Kenny now serves as the National Basketball Retired Players Association Vice President of Membership and Benefits. Kenny, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, Spencer. Good to be on with you guys.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We appreciate you being here, and this is cool because, like I said earlier, you see all the 30th anniversary stuff with the Hornets this year. They're celebrating that. I know you've been a big part of that, so it's nice for us to, you know, kind of throw our own hat in that ring and celebrate it as well. So let's jump right in here, and we'll try not to pepper you with too many questions, but this is a treat for us and the listeners, so we want to take advantage of this time we have. So I'll go ahead and ask the first question that we got for the night for you. So you came to Charlotte, Kenny, in 1989, and you played for three coaches in three seasons, if I have that right. Each of those first three seasons, the team improved, and really drastically, I would say that last year, but the growth was slow. So how hard was it to play for three coaches in three seasons, and really, could you see that improvement happening with the team before that huge 92-93 year when you guys made the playoffs and you beat Boston in the first round?
I mean, it was such a blur. You join a team in a matter of what seemed like weeks, you have a head coaching change and you're trying to get out and win games and compete, and but you're an expansion team, and you're going out and you're fighting and clawing and digging, and some games you're like, okay, we could have got them. And then some games it's like, oh man, we're just not good enough. So it was an emotional roller coaster. And then you throw in all the coaching changes, and you know, and throughout my career, you know, some guys are blessed to land in the Lakers, Bulls dynasties, or Celtics dynasties, where you know you winning and you winning and you're in championship series, and you know, but there's still some value when you take a team from 19 wins to almost 50 wins, and you feel like you truly accomplished something. So the growing pains, as they call it, the high coach turnover, the high player turnover, it came with the territory. And if you remember back in those days, I think it was in a couple of years, you had four expansion teams, Charlotte, Orlando, Miami, mm-hmm. and I think Toronto. So you really had a huge growth spurt.
Yeah.
In the NBA as far as expansion. But I guess one thing that kept us sane, we led the NBA in attendance. And yep. coming in into the Hive with 23,674, I think, was the number. it was awesome. It was, you know, you had those fans yelling for you. And win, lose, or draw, you gave it your all. So it was a wonderful experience, and you know, it really was a highlight and a delight in my career to play here for 6 years.
No, yeah, that's awesome. And I was actually watching the, you know, and Alonzo Mourning hits the shot to beat the Celtics, I guess, in what was game 4 of the playoffs in the first round that year. There's this big dog pile, and I watched it probably like 15 times today. I was like, where's Kenny? I was like, I can't find Kenny. I'm sure he's in that pile somewhere, number 44. I never actually found you. So where were you in that moment? I mean, that moment sticks out in Hornets fans, I think, in their mind.
That's interesting that you asked that question, and I'm going to give you a perspective that nobody has ever heard, because nobody's ever asked that question. You didn't see me on the court because I was on the bench. And
I just thought you were at the bottom of the pile from the bench, like after the shot went in. That's more of what I was asking.
No, I came from the bench because in that game, Kevin McHale retired after that game.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he scored 32 points. And most of them was on Alonzo. Alonzo was in foul trouble, and I had to basically say, Coach, I think Alan Bristow was our coach. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you got to get Zoe out the game. We're going to need him. I'll guard Kevin McHale. Let me be the, you know, you see on those crash test dummies. Let me just be the crash test dummy. But we got to have the big fella at the end of the game. And that's the reason why I was on the bench. I was the sacrificial lamb. I'm like, nah, I'll just, this guy is red hot. I'll take him because those are going to fall out. And that's kind of how that game transpired. And,
wow,
you know, Kevin McHale was one of those kind of guys. If he made his first two shots, you were in trouble. And he made his first two shots. And Zoe was in foul trouble. I think he had 3 fouls halfway through the second quarter. And in the third quarter, I'm like, Zoe, you got to go park it. I got to guard this guy. Obviously, you can't stop him. He done scored half the 32 on you. So
that's...
I actually had to go out there and take a few jumpers and jump hooks and up and unders from Kevin McHale so that, that Zoe could be available in that game. And he hit that elbow jumper. And if you look at the clip, I was coming in off the bench because I must have got 4 or 5 fouls trying to guard Kevin McHale, and the guy retired, and he had 32-12.
So
that's how that game ended, and we won it. And it was I got a photo of that picture on my wall, but me coming off the bench, jumping over the pile. Now, Zoe was on the bottom of the pile because we all just crashed it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I'm really glad I asked that question because basically what you're telling us is you were the hero of that game. What,
yeah, exactly.
You were the hero.
No. The hero always makes the last shot.
Yeah.
I was a sacrificial lamb.
Well, you should at least get an assist for it, though, right? Like, I think Dell's the one that inbounds him the ball, but you should at least get like a half an assist for that or something.
Well, I got a pat on the back because throughout the course of the game, I had to manage. So, can you imagine trying to get that guy to come out of game? A playoff game to tell him to sit down because Kevin McHale is killing you. Oh, gosh, we about got in a fist fight on the bench. But, you know, that was my role. That was my leadership role on the team to tell the guys the things they didn't like to hear or want to hear, but what's best for the team. And, you know, I ended up right in that situation as in a whole lot more. So, you know, it goes down as one of the greatest shots in Hornets history because it took us to the playoffs for the first time.
Sure, no doubt. No, that's an awesome story. Man, I'm glad I asked that question. All right, well, speaking of roles, so tell us a little about your current role with the National Basketball Retired Players Association. And really, I'm just curious, we know why it's important, but you can give us some insight on that as well for the retired players. But why is it also important, really, for the league as we know it today?
Well, a lot of people, they don't know the history of the National Basketball Retired Players Association. And our founders are Dave Bing, Archie Clark, Oscar Robertson, Dave Cowens, and Dave the Busher. And these guys came together and they started, you know, back in those days, I was a player rep, and when I was on the executive committee for the Players Association, and, you know, in the contract negotiations with the, you know, NBA, David Stern, and the owners of the collective bargaining agreements. But those guys were the founders that said, we need to start a association for retired players. And so in 92, it came to fruition, and those guys fought and they battled to have a landing spot for guys when they finished. And most people don't understand, when you've been a professional athlete for 8, 9, 10, 12, 14 years, whatever your career is, and you have 20,000 people in arenas jumping up and yelling, you know, every time you come into the game, that's the ultimate rush. That's the ultimate satisfaction. That's the ultimate achievement of what you achieved in your professional sports endeavor. But that locker room turns into a meat locker, because you can win a whole lot of games, but Father Time is undefeated. At every point, you're going to be a retired professional athlete. And the thing that our founders and Dave Bing, Archie Clark, Dave Cowens, Dave DeBuscher, Oscar Robertson, those guys wanted to establish a safe landing spot where players could come to for after-career resources, after-playing career guidance. And through the years, it's become a valuable resource for players. And, I mean, I joined the day I retired. When I retired in 96, it was like a given. You joined the Retired Basketball Players Association, and any career advice, any direction, I came from an era where we, you know, guys weren't just leaving school. There was no one and done. You stayed 4 years, you know. I played my 4 years at Old Dominion and walked out of there with a major and a minor degree because you weren't thinking of, back in those days, you weren't making, what a lot of people don't understand today, even the players, even the young players today. When I came into the NBA in 1986, the payroll for the entire team was $12.5 million.
Jeez. Today that's the mid-level exception now, basically.
Today you have six players on a team making more than a whole team made in 86. So we knew when we finished playing, we had to go to work. And, you know, God bless expansion and the internet and technology. And now you got NBA games shown in most of the countries in the world. The player salaries have went up 50 times what we made, but still, at the end of the day, you have to have a team and you have to have a place where you can go for post-career advice and guidance. And, you know, to this day, that's what we do. And a part of my job as VP of membership and benefits is to try to get the messaging out there about our organization and the benefits and the things that we try to provide to retired NBA players. And now today our organization has morphed into a really all-inclusive basketball family because we consist of retired NBA, ABA, WNBA, and Harlem Globetrotters. So we are truly the official alumni association for professional basketball players here in the United States.
Wow. Kenny, this is Richie, by the way. Speaking of the league today, what's the biggest thing that you've noticed in today's NBA on the court versus, you know, the days when you played in the mid-90s? I don't know how much of an opportunity you get to watch NBA today or if you stick strictly to college or NBA, but what's the biggest thing, the biggest difference you see on the court?
Well, I think the biggest difference is the players are in a position to become friends. And I say that in a context of just the evolution of the game. You know, you would have never caught Magic Johnson signing with the Celtics, Larry Bird signing with the Lakers, Michael signing with the Lakers, anything of that nature, because we were pretty much stationary. And the salary cap, the free agency, and a lot of people don't really understand, unless you've been involved in the league and the negotiations and things that I have, you know, and you're talking about going back to the 80s and 90s, players were free agents, but you were only able to transition to teams that had a salary slot for you. So basically, if you were making $800,000, you could go only to a team that had $800,000 below the cap to spend. And then the Larry Bird exception came into play. And what that meant was any player that played with a team for 2 years could sign with that team regardless of whether they were at the cap, over the cap, that team could sign. And what it did, it prevented players from changing teams, as you see in the league today. And it promoted a sense of loyalty from the fans. And a lot of people don't understand, back in the early 80s, 81, 82, the NBA Finals was tape delayed. If they were on the West Coast, it was tape delayed. And the product was not what it is today. And of course, with technology, live streaming, digital, everything that happens today, you can get NBA games live in every continent in the world. So the product developed, the players developed, the owners developed, and what you have now is this massive global organization of the NBA. It's not just in the United States, and therein lies the escalation of salaries and mm-hmm. what you see today. But, you know, all I can say is if an owner crazy enough to give a guy $35 million a year, he should be crazy enough to take it.
Exactly. Yeah, the NBA definitely has gone more global. Every year you just see more and more countries getting involved and watching the NBA, and you see these numbers around the world, how popular this league is. And like you said, it drives the business. It drives the business. So for this next question, Kenny, I want you to kind of imagine yourself playing in today's NBA game. Just to give the listeners a kind of a stat line here. His best season for the Hornets was in 91-92, where he averaged almost 13 points, 7 rebounds. He was a very good rebounder, and he shot 53% from the field. And until Dwight Howard, who only played 1 year with the Hornets organization, Kenny Gattison led the Hornets organization in field goal percentage. So, honest question, how do you think that you would fare in today's NBA, just your playing style and everything like that?
Well, you want an honest answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would use my 6 fouls up in about 8 minutes and 30 seconds. I did not shoot threes. It's mm-hmm, like now mm-hmm. everybody's a stretch four, stretch five. My range was 17 feet, not 17 feet and 6 inches. I played 17 feet and in. There lies the high field goal percentage.
Right.
And the game has changed. And, you know, a whole lot of players, you know, from my era back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you always got this debate about, oh, those guys couldn't play back in our day. Yes, they could.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, they could. The coaches back in our day couldn't coach them. No way Hubie Brown will allow Steph Curry to dribble 16 times before he take a shot. You know, James Harden couldn't play for Pat Riley. He couldn't take 20 seconds out the 24-second clock to step back and shoot a three-pointer. It's these players, they have more freedom and they have more skill. Kevin Durant's almost 7 foot, and yeah. he'll kill yeah. you from the three-point line to the elbow. These guys have such high skill levels. Now, on the back end of their high skill level, they about as undisciplined as a 6-year-old in Chuck E. Cheese. And ESPN is the fault of all of that. You get a guy that goes 3 for 19 with his three makes on ESPN. You know, you went 3 for 19 back and out. When I played, you wouldn't play for us 2 weeks. You might be getting your passport out going overseas.
Yeah.
Just real quick, I'm just going to jut in here. Does it surprise you, like, with Harden? I mean, Durant, some of these guys you've mentioned, and some of them play a little bit more selfishly than others, but does it surprise you how their teammates seem to just kind of melt right in around them and don't push back against that a little bit? I guess it's not their place to push back, of course, but I feel like back in when you were playing, there would have been more pushback from that perspective, I guess. I don't know.
Well, and I can tell you just from a guy that's done it, you know, on every level. When you watch, you know, arguably the greatest player of my era, Michael Jordan, Michael didn't win games from the three-point line. He posted up in that triangle offense, and he killed you from 19 feet and in. And so as players back in those days, you thinking to yourself, oh, man, 17, 18, 19 feet, I can do what he does. But then you realize, well, these guys, they can hand check, and they pushing, and they beating and banging, and he's still making shots. So you figure it out, like, no, I can't do what he does. He does it 82 games a year. Now, in today's era, where you got a Steph, a Klay Thompson, a Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, I mean, you go down the line. As a player, these guys come in range when they get 2 feet across half court. And you can sit on the bench and you watch them night in and night, but they score 4 feet past the three-point line. And as a player, you have to sit down and you have to be honest and say, no, I can't do that. I got three-point range, but I don't have three-point-plus range. And that's what the game has kind of come to. And you know, no different than, you know, guys in my era, we marveled at what Michael did and Magic and Bird and, you know, the greats that, you know, we did. Through evolution, the players have gotten taller, longer. I mean, look at Giannis over in Milwaukee, the Greek freak, the guy, he dunked on people from 15 foot jumping off the wrong foot. I mean, it's what these, and I'm telling you, in my lifetime, I'll see the NBA court get lengthened, expanded, and the goal will go up 6 inches because these guys, they're just, you know, they're hitting the head on the basket, on the backboard. And you talked about Zion Williams. So come on, give me a break. You talking about an NFL tight end.
Yeah.
Monster dunking. I mean, it's beautiful to watch, but that rim's going up and that coach going to lengthen in my lifetime because guys are so long and they're so athletic where you have guys that the skill level is so high. You got a 6'9", 280-pound guy bringing the ball up the court on a fast break.
Ridiculous.
Who going to stop that? Andre the Giant? No, it ain't happening. They're gonna get out of the way like you see them doing.
All right, let's take a break from the interview with Kenny Gattis and we'll get right back in. But let me tell you guys about an offer from Blue Wire, from MyPillow. If you're planning to eat better for the New Year's, exercise more, be more patient, whatever it may be, it all starts with a good night's rest. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and enter my promo code, COZY, and you'll get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. It's amazing what a difference a great pillow makes. If you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on their 4-pack, shipping is absolutely free. That's right, no shipping cost. And don't forget about their 60-day money-back guarantee. There's nothing better than the gift of restorative sleep. Go to MyPillow.com, click on their 4-pack special, and use code COZY to get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com or call 800-966-1472 and use promo code COZY. All right, let's get back into the interview with Kenny Gattis.
Yeah, I was covering a game at Duke this year, and the media seating is right on the sideline there, and I saw Zion go up and try to block a shot, and he hit his head on the backboard, and it was like, you don't have a replay when it happens right in front of you like that. It was like, wait a second, I think he just hit his head on the backboard here. But Kenny, this is Brian. I'm the third co-host here. In the past, I was fortunate enough to be a part of an interview with another North Carolina product that played his college ball at ODU. Ken Bazemore now carved out a nice little career with the Atlanta Hawks. When we talked with him, he mentioned his recruitment. He was pretty good-hearted about it. He was kind of cracking up. He was like, basically, you know, I wasn't good enough to get an offer from, you know, Duke, NC State, UNC, Wake, like the big ACC in-state schools. But he mentioned that he was a big State fan. You know, he really wanted, I think Sidney Lowe was the coach there at the time. He really wanted a chance to State. Didn't work out. Obviously, things have gone splendidly for him going from ODU to the NBA and, again, carving out a big career for himself. So I was wondering, you know, What was your recruitment similar to that? Did you have interactions with North Carolina schools like that, or was there one? Did you really want to go to State or UNC or Duke or Wake or, you know, Charlotte or East Carolina, anything like that.
Okay, well, you think the answer to the Boston Celtics win in 92 was perplexing. Wait till you get a hold of this.
All right.
I was a football player. I grew up wanting to be the tight end for the Dallas Cowboys.
All right.
I slept with a basketball. I spun a basketball. I slept with a football. I spun a football on my finger. I was the worst basketball player in the whole state of North Carolina. I could care less about basketball. I was going to be a NFL tight end. That was my dream. And it's so funny that we go down it because a whole lot of people don't know this story. But my true love, my first love was football. And that's what I worked at. And I had football scholarships from UCLA to Ohio State, Michigan wow. State, Clemson, Alabama, you name it. I left high school. I was 6'7" and a half. 235 and read a 4.5 40. So when I tell you I had just as many offers in football that I had in basketball, it's true. And what happened was I grew up down in Wilmington with Mike, and he went to 5-star basketball camp, and he won all of the awards, the MVP and everything up there. And when he got done with 5-star, I played at New Hanover High School. He played at Blaney. We were like arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you guys got to go to 5-star. I'm like, a basketball camp? I'm like, no, I'm a football player. I mean, really, after Clemson won the national championship in football, I think in 81, mm-hmm. Danny Ford and his staff was at my high school recruiting me to come to Clemson to play football. And to make a long story short, I had scholarship offers to play basketball from every school in the ACC, SEC. All the ACC, Big Ten, SEC schools are like, look, just come here. You can play both football and basketball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was a late bloomer in basketball. I mean, back where I came from down in Wilmington, our coaches were so tough. If you dribbled the ball in between your legs, you got cut. High school was the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. And just to clarify this story, this myth about Michael Jordan being cut from the basketball team, that's the biggest crock of bull you ever wanted. Mike was in the 10th grade. In Wilmington, North Carolina, you in the 10th grade, you play JV basketball, JV football. I don't care who you were. Mike wanted to play varsity basketball. He told the coach, I'm trying out for the varsity team. And coach, pop hearing. You're like, you can try out all you want to. You play. Okay, so he tried out. Now, mind you, we didn't play AAU basketball in Wilmington. We didn't know who the guys were in Greensboro and Charlotte. I mean, and a lot of people don't even remember this, except the guys that actually were there. Bobby Crimmins had the best basketball camp when he was over there at Appalachian State. You talking about 1980, me, Mike, James Worthy, Sleeper Floyd, Brad Daugherty, Buzz Peterson, all Cecil X, we were at Bobby Crimmins' basketball camp, and we running around there, Dominique Wilkins, you know, we running around there, dunking on each other. And I mean, I was a football player, so I just followed the hell out of everybody. And we, like, now, all these years later, we're like, damn, we were pretty good. And so as the story evolves, I had scholarship offers from every ACC school in football and basketball. SEC, Big Ten, you name it. I was a really, really good football player. and I was a really, really good basketball player, but I never put the work in for basketball until I grew, like, in between my sophomore and junior year in high school. And I'm like, you know what? During football season, I spent my lunch time in the gym working on basketball. I would tape up my right hand and do everything just fundamentals. There wasn't no going behind your back in between your legs and all of that. And how I ended up at Old Dominion, I went to five-star basketball camp. All of these great players around the country, everybody, that was the place to be. We just pulverized. My guys from Wilmington, we was like, okay, y'all think this a game. This ain't no game. We playing for blood. We don't lose. And so at the end of the day, I end up being on the whatever five-star All-Stars team. And then from that day, every college in America is recruiting me to play basketball. And I'm like, y'all got it twisted. I'm a football player. But I started growing. I just kept growing. I went from 6'1 to 6'3 to from 6'3 to 6'6. And believe it or not, my back in those days, I don't know what the college elves are. I'll assume they still have 6 official visits. 5 of my official visits were ACC schools for basketball. Mm-hmm. I met Mark West at the camp at five-star. Mark West was a finance major, and he was walking around with books studying while the rest of the basketball council was goofing off and telling jokes and acting silly. And I'm like, you know what? What school you go to? I like you. You carry yourself in a professional manner. You speak. You are articulate. And Mark West and I became friends. And I tell him, I say, you know what? I'm going to use my last visit to come visit you at Old Dominion. I said, you understand, I'm not coming to Old Dominion. I'm just going to come visit you, so at least you'll get a steak dinner out the deal. And, I always took you to a nice steakhouse on your official visit. And I visited Old Dominion, and I think I arrived at night. I think I just finished playing in the North Carolina high school basketball game and went to ODU on an official visit and got in at night. And when I opened up the curtains at the hotel, I was looking out at the ocean. I'm like, this is just like Wilmington. This is great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's how I chose Old Dominion, because of Mark West, the head coach, Paul Webb, Oliver Purnell, and Eddie Webb were assistants. And to this day, those three guys are some of my best friends in this world, you know. And that's why I always tell kids, I'm like, if you're good enough, you'll be in the NFL, you'll be in the NBA, you'll be where you're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But I went to the school that felt right. I went to the school that matched my personality, so to speak, mm-hmm. you know. And gosh, Lefty Driesell wanted me to come to Maryland, and all he could envision was a backcourt of Len Bias and Kenny Gattison. And
wow,
he called me and he wanted me to commit, and I said, Coach, I can't do it. And he's like, why not? You and Len Bias, you guys will be in the NBA and da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, no, nah, Coach, I'm sorry, but I don't trust nobody named Lefty. And the man called me everything but my first and last name. I never heard a coach talk that way. But that reinforced my choice of going to ODU, because I've been knowing Coach Webb for 36 years, and still to this day, I've never heard him say a curse word. So it's not times have changed. Players were, I went to school to play college basketball. I chose Old Dominion because if I'd have went to a ACC school or a Big Ten school, I would have played both football and basketball. ODU had no football team back then, mm-hmm. so I wouldn't have been tempted. I'd have walked on campus at any other school in America, and from day one, I'd have been the best tight end on campus, but I'd have been the best power forward on campus. It was, there was never no doubt in my ability, but my objectives were always clear. And like I told the guys that were recruiting me, I said, I play both sports. I'm going to end up with no knees and no degree. I said, so, and when I told my high school football coach that I wasn't playing, I had pro scouts at my high school football games. And when I told him I wasn't playing college football, he went berserk. He thought somebody paid me or something. I'm like, no, I'm just as broke as I was yesterday, but I'm just, you know, I'm playing college football. Something draws me to college basketball. And, you know, I ended up, you know, I kept my recruiting open in football. I didn't let it be known so the football coaches would still come and see my teammates. And about five or six of them ended up with D1 scholarships. And Guy Long in high school ended up, Clyde Simmons, ended up going to Western Carolina and got drafted by the Eagles and being a Pro Bowl defensive end. So, you know, we all have our stories and we all have our little nuances in them, but you know, with not playing in the ACC, you know, picking a school that I really liked, there was nobody in my life was like, okay, you're from North Carolina, you going to play college basketball? You better stay in the ACC and play in North Carolina, which would have been where I was supposed to be. You know, you're not supposed to be as good as I was and leave the state of North Carolina to play basketball. You know, just like when Dean Smith was recruiting Mike, you know, Dean Smith is like, Gavison, you're going to be a fine player's son, but you're just not going to play. You have the word of the kid. Yeah, and he's not going to – you're just not going to play, son. I said, okay, coach. But then James Worthy, he started leaving early, and they were stuck with Brad Daugherty at power forward. And, you know, it was just one of those things when Coach K and, you know – he recruited me from Duke, and you know, I had the opportunity. Coach K may be my most favorite coach that never coached me. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to work with him in Team USA and some things through the years. And you know, he was like, Kenny, we really want you to come to Duke. And I said, Coach, I paid to take the SAT. I don't have 25. Duke wouldn't take anything but the ACT back then. I'm like, Coach, I ain't got $25 to pay for another test. And Coach K, he's a straight shooter. He was like, well, I can't pay for it. And I'm like, well, Dad, I guess I won't be coming to Duke. And North Carolina State and Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, every Virginia, I had scholarships to every ACC school out there, you know, football and basketball. And it's just so ironic that, you know, it comes down to, you know, when I got inducted to the Wilmington Sports Hall of Fame, and they named the court after me over at my high school, Kenny Gattison Court, and I get inducted to the Wilmington Sports Hall of Fame, I get this old guy, well, congratulations, but you should have played in the ACC. Like after all these years, he's like, you got to bring that up.
Never end.
So, yeah, but it's just like with Kent Bazemore. ODU found Kent Bazemore recruiting another player on Kent's team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kent was an athlete times two. Kid Baseball couldn't play dead in the Cowboy movie. He had no basketball skill whatsoever. He just was.
I think
he was the most athletic guy you'd ever see. And he just grew into it. He made himself. He figured it out. And, you know, through the years, I've become friends with him. And he was like, I would see him at some summer league. He's like, you know, Gat, what do I need to do? I said, you need to become a basketball player and not an athlete. And I said, you got to become a guard. And he put in the work. And I think he's making about $13 or $14 million now.
Yeah, not too bad. He joked that he thought his first year at ODU, he didn't make a shot at all in practice the entire year. That was what Bazemore joked about. He was like, "Nah, seriously, I didn't score one time."
No,
practice.
It's no joke. It's the truth. I mean, he couldn't. I mean, Kent Bazemore couldn't beat a 2-year-old at cornhole. I mean, it just. He was an athlete. If you told him to jump over a station wagon, he could do that, but he couldn't throw that ball in a ocean out of a canoe.
All right, Kenny. Oh my gosh, that is an awesome story. I think we've asked a lot of the right questions tonight. This has been great. All right, rapid fire question, because I know you got to go, and we do too. But before we left, I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you what the greatest Hornet that you ever played with was in Charlotte. And then if you've got one quick story about this guy, and if it's you, fine. You know, I think I told you that earlier. If Kenny Gadsden is the greatest Hornet you ever played with, then that's fine too. But do you have a quick one for us?
Muggsy Bogues. Muggsy
Interesting. Bogues.
And I don't care. Zoe and LJ, we would have never reached the playoffs without Zoe and LJ, because they were our two all-stars. But to see Muggsy Bogues come into practice in games, and a guy that was 5'3", and he put the effort in that he did every day. You forget taking a day off. You would not take a playoff, whether it was practice or a game. And it was just the way it was. We were a band of brothers that we refused to let each other down. And Muggsy's out there, and he's getting screened, and he's getting picked, and he's picking up people 94 feet, and he's beat up and bruised up after games. And then the next day, he's the first one on the court. I don't care how tired, I don't care how physically spent you were, you had to answer the bell. And that's why I say Muggsy Bogues, not because when you talk about just a physical presence, Alonzo Mourning, he just refused to be stopped. He had a tenacity that I've never seen. LJ, he might have been the most talented, because he could beat you with a jump shot, and then he could take you power to the rim. But Muggsy, he gave you that drive, that no quit, because when you saw a guy come out there 5'3", 160 pounds, soaking wet, that refused to give in or give up, you didn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. You brought it every day in practice, every night in games, and that's why, you know, I would say Muggsy was the greatest, because he drove us and he pushed us. Well, not really. He didn't really know he was doing it, but that's what made the team. And every professional athlete has that one guy he saw as a kid that you said, I want to be like him and bring that toughness. And then when you get on a team, you get that one guy that just inspires you on a daily basis. And, you know, that's what leads me to say that Muggsy, he was the greatest Hornet, because he didn't kill you with his jump shot. He wasn't big enough to guard a whole lot of guys, but there just was no quit in him. You know, I don't care how hard he got screened or picked, or he would jump back up and you're like, okay, I'm going back out there. So it kept us going. It gave us that fight, that no quit attitude. And you know, when he led us out on that court in that hive every night, you were getting all we had. So I throw that hat right over the mugs. The greatest one.
That is awesome, and probably not an answer that everybody out there that's going to listen to this was expecting to hear, so even better. But, Kenny, look, man, thanks again. We really appreciate your time and your insight, because I think some of the stories you told and just some of the things that you know and some of your opinions, it's really special, and I think everybody will enjoy this episode and everything you had to bring. So thanks again, man, and we'll do this again. And also, we're going to send you some BuzzBeat gear, so I'm going to – follow up with you and get your size as long as you promise to wear it.
All right, will do, for sure, and be happy to join you guys again.
All right, thanks, Kenny. Take care, man. We'll talk to you soon. All right, guys. Well, that was episode 89 of the BuzzBeat podcast. Some really good stories there. I don't know whether we've really had an episode like that yet. Kind of sit around the campfire and let the old smart ones kind of tell you what the real deal is. So that was kind of a treat for us, and I hope it was for you guys as well. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter. It's at BuzzBeatPod. And don't forget, we're also a proud member of the Blue Wire Network. Check out BlueWirePods.com for tons of other podcasts. A lot of great content out there, and it's growing every single day. So it's really good stuff. All right, well, we're going to hit you guys next week with the trade deadline primer edition. It's going to be nothing but trade deadline stuff, and with all this AD news, a lot of teams are going to try to get in the mix in that. So why not the Hornets? We'll bring that to you guys next week. Until then, go Hornets.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.